What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
Louise Cooney's Open Book, a Go Loud original podcast. Go Loud!
Hello, you're very welcome back to Open Book, presented by Go Loud. I'm Louise Cooney, and I'm so excited to introduce On Post as our new sponsor for Open Book. The written word has always been at the heart of On Post, and both On Post and books continue to connect people all over the world. So they are the perfect sponsor, and I'm so thrilled to have them on board. As you may or may not know, this podcast originated from our virtual book club, which I launched back in 2020. We met on Zoom every week and created just a really lovely community of people that I did not want to let go of. The podcast was then born. I thought a podcast would be a better way to reach everyone now that normal, busy life has fully resumed. You can listen in your own time, no matter where you are or what you're doing. Throughout the first season, we ran a book club here on the pod, and this season we're focusing on open and honest conversations about life and the stories that shape us. We've had several incredible authors as guests on the podcast, with more to come over the rest of the season. Today we have Choopy as our special guest, the jewellery designer, the entrepreneur, the mother, the huge supporter of women in business. I'm so excited to have her on. She's an amazing storyteller. She's created an incredible business, and I'm just very excited to hear more from her. Choopy brought me gorgeous flowers today, gorgeous red peonies, to celebrate my news that myself and Mark are expecting. She has a three-year-old daughter at home, so it was just nice to be able to chat to her about what that looked like managing your own business and having a daughter. And she is an amazing woman to take advice from. So we started off chatting about that, and then we got into the business and everything in between. It was a really nice chat, so I really hope you enjoy it. Choopy, I'm so excited and honoured to have you here today. I know how busy you are, so thank you so much for making the time.
Oh, it's my honour. What a joy to be here with you, Louise. It's been amazing being with you on the journey, and now to do this together is gorgeous.
I know, and we've lots to catch up on.
We do. Yeah, I know. We've had so much to gossip about. We have to make sure we keep it all on track.
Yes, so we were just chatting before we started recording about the pregnancy news and trying to get some advice and words of wisdom from Choopy, who manages everything. You have your business, which is huge, and you have your daughter who's only turning three, so she takes a lot of your time as well.
And I would say, like, I think it's becoming a parent. So we had a very long road to having our girl. Mm. And I think in a way it was amazing because it made us so grateful for parenthood, for motherhood. You know, I kind of always expected to have kids. And then when we found out we couldn't, it was such a shock.
Yeah.
And so then when she arrived, it is chaos and insanity and magic and wonder. And Louise, I was like, I think our job as women is not to sugarcoat it, but to celebrate it.
Yeah.
And there's loads of challenges about it, but there's such privilege and love to having a tiny little human being in your world.
I think I'm like going through phases of being like, oh my God, I can't believe this is finally happening. And then I also am so scared, and I'm like, is my whole identity going to change? Is my whole life going to change, you know?
And it's really funny because I think both things are true at once, which is you completely change and you don't change at all.
Yeah.
But you're going from two of you to three of you. Like, it's a transformative. You're going from being responsible pretty much for yourself to being responsible for this tiny little person. And so it's a huge journey. Someone described it as leaving womanhood and entering motherhood. And so you still, womanhood is there as a huge part of it, but you are forever and ever a mother. You're always going to be someone's mum. And that's such an honour, like, to get to be someone's person is huge.
Yeah, I don't think it happens overnight either. Like, I don't feel like a mother yet, you know? That
no, well, you didn't.
And I'm not you know?
And for some people, it comes really quickly. For some people, it takes longer, and it's a complicated. And I don't think, like, I think that's what I always think about so much of what we do at Choopy. It's not about, like I was saying, Hallmark moments and perfection. And like one day you conceive and then you are a mother and you know how to cope in all of the circumstances and situations. It's more a journey and it's different for everybody. But I would say, I think our job is probably figuring out how to be ourselves and hold ourselves. Because if you imagine our mums, and less so, as I'm much older than you, I'm nearly 40 next year. Obviously, in the business of diamonds, I am counting down the days to 40. I'm planning the diamond I'm going to get by 40th. I'm so excited for it. Unlike most people, I'm like, yay, 40, I can't wait. But my mum, you know, would have come from an era when you gave up work when you got pregnant. Like, you gave up work when you got married, you gave up work when you got pregnant, and you lost your identity. You became from a woman into someone's mum. And not that work is tied up in that, but we get to think about how would we like to shape the world around us. How much do we want? Yeah. And do we want to stay at home with our babes? Do we want to go to work? Do we want to blend in between? And so we get to shape the future for our next generation who are just arriving.
Yeah.
And equally for generations to come. So it's important. It's an active decision.
It was illegal, wasn't it, to work?
1974.
Once you got married, wasn't
it? Yeah. So 1974, it was illegal up until 1974. The marriage ban was in place.
Like, that's not even that long ago.
It's not that long ago at all. It's literally not the dark ages. But contraception was 84.
Yeah.
It was illegal till 84. So my mum, Rosita Sweetman, was one of the founders of the women's movement.
Oh, wow.
So mum was one of the 13 women who, the contraceptive train, so contraceptives were legal in the south of Ireland, but they were legal in the north of Ireland. So a whole gang of them went up north, bought a whole bunch of contraceptives, staged a big protest, called all the press, and were throwing around contraceptives, being like, look, it's illegal. And actually, as it turned out, what happened when they got the train up north is they realised that actually, whilst they were legal in the north, you could only get them on prescription. So the pills they were throwing around at the press school were actually paracetamol. So they were literally like having this big photo call about how important it was that women, as women, we have the right to choose how and when we get pregnant. But actually, it was paracetamol because it was all the old they could get.
It's crazy to think that.
It's not that long ago.
That would have been quite controversial at
hugely
the time as well. Like, you know, and now it's so normal for all of us.
And it's not that long ago. So we are reshaping motherhood.
Yeah.
This generation for us.
Yeah, we're going to have to figure all that out. Mark gets 2 weeks paternity.
Oh my God.
But I'm lucky I'm flexible. Like, and I've always said that, like, when the time comes when this happens, I'm so lucky, you know, that I can work from home. And so we'll work it out. And I look at people like you.
Yeah.
And
you work it out with your support system. Like, I would always say our girl has about six parents on I am pretty much in any given day. So my mum lives with us. We have an amazing minder. Brian and I are really involved together.
Yeah.
And you make it work. And you, like, it just means you have to shape your life around, you know, what do you want to do? So like, I try and finish work at 5 o'clock every day. At 2 p.m. I could work every hour of the day. And it does mean sometimes I go back on in the evening and check in, but it means I get those kind of hours before bedtime.
Should be turned 10 this year, right?
I know. Yeah, my first baby.
Let's
be clear.
Birthday, yeah,
thank you. Yeah, my first baby is 10 years old and my little baby is about to be 3. So yeah, huge. 10 is huge. We did a whole rebrand with 2P, new packaging, new logo. We're going to be opening a flagship store in Dublin in the autumn and then looking at flagship in London next year. So yeah, really, it's really exciting. It's huge.
That is huge. And
yeah.
So many changes and just such an exciting new chapter.
Kind of like motherhood though. It's like an overnight thing that takes, in my case, 10 years. Yeah. And the same way in that motherhood is like kind of a few years journey. I always think, you know, we're an overnight success that took a decade.
Well, before we dive more into that, let's go back to the very start. You started off in Topshop, right? In designing dresses and clothes. How did that come about? And
so that is quite literally the dark ages, 19 years ago. My God. So 19 years ago, I had a little fashion label as my way of paying my way through school and college. So a little tiny label. And like, by I mean a label as in I sold a couple of dresses a week. And so there was this little market down at Temple Bar called Cow's Lane Fashion Market. Mm-hmm. And I actually, some of my dearest friends are still from there. Courtney, Maria and Lydia are still, we're all so close because we, every weekend we'd go set up our stalls at this market, like literally take the rails out of the car, hang the dresses up, put up a pop-up dressing room. And it was such an incredible experience. And I always think, you know, your job as a designer, like my job at Chupi is making things that make people happy.
Mm-hmm.
My job is like, when I think about our diamonds, about the pieces, it's not to make, you know, art is about making one beautiful thing and hanging it on a wall and admiring it. Whereas design is about making something that makes someone happy.
Yeah.
So those very early days, quite literally standing in front of someone as they tried on a dress and went, I love this. I hate this. You know, it was such a good groundwork for what came next, which was Topshop.
Yeah, I have Clue Active, so I understand the feeling when you get something really right and
it's amazing.
Like, I live in these. These make me feel comfortable. These make me feel good. So I can only imagine that times 10, I suppose, by diamonds when it's engagements. It's really important moments in people's lives.
I think as a designer, they're like the most fun in the whole world. Like, as a creative director, so my role in Chupi right now, I'm CEO and creative director. And I think as a creative director, which I know you are so firmly in for Clue, you're in that kind of same space of CEO and creative director. It's that excitement of someone It's that, you know, that feeling when you try on the dress or you put on the ring and you just, you move differently, you feel differently. You're just like, how did I live without this? And I think I got addicted to that buzz in working in the fashion market with my little brand while I was in uni. And then Topshop, we're just about to open. And I always have to say, Topshop was once terribly cool. It's not anymore, but...
I loved Topshop for years. I miss it there.
I thought it was so amazing. So they'd opened their first flagship in Ireland on Stephen's Green, and they were scouting for designers to come design for the new store. And they came through the market one day and I got given a business card. I'll never forget it. I actually should have kept it. I know it's somewhere in my archive. It's this business card from a buyer for Topshop. And I was just like, oh, what? And so I went and did an interview and basically ended up leaving college and going and joining Topshop. Wow. So I was 21 at the time. So that's 18 years ago now. November 2005, I'll never forget. 5th of November 2005. I still celebrate it.
You were the youngest designer.
I was the youngest ever recruited. I was a baby. I was 21. Yeah, like I was so young. I remember I was so young and so naive that, so the launch night happened. It's huge. They'd phoned in a whole bunch of people from the UK. Big party. And we sold out. So if you imagine this kind of, like I remember having was 12 linear feet. So in retail, you would think linear feet. How many feet do you have? Mm. And so we had 12 linear feet just off Grafton Street. And it sold out. Literally, I remember at the end of the night, there was 3 skirts on the rail. And I was so new to the game. I didn't realize that every shop has the same amount of stock in the back room as they have on the shop floor. I'd never heard of replen. I didn't know you were meant to have extra. So we literally sold out and it was frantic. Like trying to, like I had an amazing team. We were like, literally, I remember that week I had all of my friends over at my house sewing labels into the clothes. Wow. We made everything in Ireland. So we made locally and then we were literally hand stitching in the labels so that we could get, it was insane.
All part of the learning.
It was. Suppose.
Yeah. There's always things like that in business. Isn't there where you're like, we didn't prepare for this, you know?
And like, it's the dream. A sellout is always the dream.
Yeah.
But it was a learning curve. I was 21 when I joined them and 27 when I left them.
Why did you decide to leave?
So when I got scouted, I remember talking to my college at the time and saying, do you think I should take the opportunity? And they were very sweet. And they said, no, you should stay in college, finish your education, you know, do this and then go on to do your degree and your master's. And I kind of felt, I got where they were coming from, but I thought, no, I want to take the, if I look back, and I always think, I ask myself this question all the time, what are the things I'll regret? You know, what do I regret? When I'm 65, what am I going to be looking back on and think, yes, I did the right thing or no, I did the wrong thing? And actually, ultimately, I always knew that I would never regret taking the risk of joining Topshop. Absolutely. And so I knew that, what was the worst that was going to happen? And so, but I also knew I wouldn't do it when I grew up. And for me, grown up was in my 40s. I knew I wouldn't work in fashion in my 40s.
Yeah.
And so that was a huge part of leaving.
And Topshop is now gone from the high street.
It is.
Do you think it's that it's too difficult to keep retail in this day and age when online has become so important? Or is it that it just couldn't keep up with the times?
I think there's a huge challenge for fashion brands in that, you know, some of them like Zara are amazing. They are, you know, exceptional. Like they have a lot to do in their ethics, but they're exceptional in terms of their design capability, how fast they can turn out cutting edge contemporary design work. And Topshop at that point, when I joined them, had Jane Shepherdson as the creative director, phenomenal woman, and had Kate Moss collaborations. You know, they just had the zeitgeist. Mm-hmm. And if you lose that connection with why, you know, that thing, that what are people wearing? Why are they wearing it? What makes them happy? It'd be like if we suddenly decided at Cheapy, like, actually, maybe we should just go everything rose gold. We're going to go rose gold. We're going to go blue stones. We're going to like, because we had a whim that it felt like a move. And it's not that rose gold isn't beautiful. It's not that blue stones aren't beautiful. Blue stones and rose gold, you know, they lost connection with their why. Who were they serving? You know, what were they making for?
Yeah.
Whereas Zara knows what it's doing. It is producing catwalk knockoffs at lightning speed for a really fashion conscious consumer. Mm-hmm. And so I think Topshop really lost its why. And so, like many retailers, it didn't make it.
I wonder, will Zara keep up that pace? Because it's a fast pace, like, isn't it?
Huge.
And but that huge turnaround.
They've built their business model around it. Mm. So we're doing this really fascinating program with Enterprise Ireland at the moment, and we're doing a big case study on Zara. And they literally have built their design and manufacturing process. So it's 2 or 3 weeks to market. So from the day they see it to the day to market, every designer is churning out like something like 8 finished designs a day. So they've literally built their supply chain so that they can iterate as fast as possible. I think their bigger threat is probably a drive for sustainability. Mm. And look, I recognize the hypocrisy, as in Shein hauls are all over the place. And it's not like, you know, Shein versus Zara, the challenges with both of them. Mm-hmm. But I think what Zara is doing, as long as we want to wear fashion forward, like that direct from the catwalk piece, they've built their business model to serve it, which is the question we all have to answer, as whether we are building businesses or working in brilliant businesses. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, do we serve our customer? Do we serve our community? I always think, actually, it fascinates me. We get obsessed with what we do. We make diamond rings. But actually, why we do it? Why does someone buy a diamond ring? They're not like, oh, it's a nice ring, it's shiny. If you wanted something shiny, maybe you'd go to Primark, maybe you'd go to AliExpress. You can buy shiny anywhere. Yeah. But actually, what we do, the why, is we mark the biggest moments in people's lives. We are love, hope, and everything in between. Mm-hmm. The day you fall in love, the day you get married, equally the day you get divorced, the day you leave the terrible relationship, the day you have your beautiful baby, you welcome them into the world. And so we, as a business, we always get obsessed. We are obsessed with the what. Yeah. We make diamond rings, we make carbon neutral gold, we use recycled diamonds. It's a lot of what. But actually, the why is much more important. Mm-hmm. Love, hope, and everything in between. That's why you buy a diamond. It's why you mark a moment in your life. And so I think that's the balance we all have to remember.
I love hearing you talk about it. You can just hear how passionate you are about it. And it's such a good story. And I'm like, when you start telling it, I'm like, tell me who, when, where, who, like all these moments. Were you always interested in jewellery in that way?
I think I was always, always interested in designing and making things. So I got my first sewing machine when I was 5. Mm-hmm. So quite literally a working Singer sewing machine. Like, it would never get past health and safety now. It literally was like a little mini sewing machine and with a real working paddle that had a real needle that you could sew actual, like I made my dolls, had outrageous outfits from it. But it was that, it was making jewellery. My mum had, worked out in Central America, so Guatemala, Honduras, and then down into Peru. I would have been with the aid agencies as a journalist. And so she had literally drawers full of beads and gemstones and things she'd picked up on her travels. So like beautiful amber from Peru, gorgeous detailed beads from Guatemala. So we were always taking them apart and making new things. And that love of making things, which became a love of making things that made people happy. I was pretty much always designing for someone else, not just for me. Being like, how would you wear, like, you know, if you were wearing a necklace, what would it look like? You know, I loved that. I've always thought of it as kind of like a giant puzzle, trying to figure out what someone else would love, what they'd wear, how they'd wear it, and then the joy of seeing that happiness. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I would say my childhood was all of the things, whether it was clothes or fashion, but it was making, a lot of making.
It's the creative.
Yeah, it's that creative
love.
To make
people happy.
Yeah.
Where did the idea for Chupi come from?
Well, Brian always says he needs to get more credit for this. So Brian, my husband, we met when we were kids, so when we were 16. And he says... 2 weeks, and I say 3 weeks, that he was going to marry me. He was like, we're going to get married. And I was like, don't be ridiculous. I was like, I don't know if I want to get married. Like, it's such a ridiculous idea. Like, if we love each other, we'll stay together. Why would we ever bother getting married? Like, impressively cynical, Louise. Given that so much what we do now is about love. But at 16, I definitely didn't really see the point in getting married. So fast forward 10 years.
2-3 weeks after you met?
Literally. He said it 3 weeks afterwards, and he says it 2 weeks afterwards. Aww. Yeah, he was like, he's very, very sweet about it. Like, he was just like, one and done. He was like, I'm in love. And
so cute.
Yeah, really sweet. If you think about cynical kind of 16, 17-year-old boys, it was really lovely. Yeah, he was very, he is a real romantic. And so it took him, fast forward 10 years later, and we're in Montpellier in the south of France. It's actually a beautiful city. And we've just arrived. We've just gone off a train from Barcelona. So we'd spent a few days in Barcelona, and then we're coming to Montpellier for a few days. And Brian kept trying to convince me to go for a walk to the Botanic Gardens. I said, it's really weird. So Brian, if you had to imagine someone who liked Botanic Gardens, Brian would be on the planet furthest from that description. He just is not whereas I was brought up in Wicklow. Yeah. I love flowers and wild outdoors and like how gorgeous. And he spent the whole day trying to persuade me. And I was really tired because we'd kind of been out when we were in Barcelona, and we kind of thought of Montpellier as like our sleepy, like just chill out time. And I was reading a book on the balcony. And anyway, eventually he gave up. He was like, okay, fine. I was like, just really strange. I couldn't have got the clue if you literally held the ring in front of my face. I wouldn't have realized. So eventually he persuaded me to go out for dinner, which says everything about me. I will travel for food. I was okay, cool. This place that does this amazing steak and a chocolate fondant. And I was like, deadly, I'm done. Across the park we went. On the way back through, he was like midnight by a fountain. It was as beautiful and cliched and perfect as it could have been. And he got down on one knee and pulled this gorgeous gold ring out of his pocket and asked me, would I marry him? And 10 years later, my opinion had changed. And I said yes. And it was gorgeous. And I remember wearing my engagement ring for those days afterwards and thinking, and I tell this story all the time because it was so profound. So that is 13 years ago. And I remember holding it for the first time and thinking, I quite literally own a piece of the future. Your jewelry, you know, if you ask your mum, ask your granny to tell the story of their lives, they will tell it through their jewelry. You know, it's literally our living autobiography. It's the day you met, the day you fell in love, the day you got married, the day you welcomed your baby into the world. All of the biggest moments in our lives are marked by jewelry. And this was my first piece of the future. I was, you know, 26. I'd been working in this crazy fashion career, so I had some cool fashion stuff, mm-hmm. but I'd never bought myself a piece of fine jewellery. And so it was quite profound. And I was like, my God, like one day my daughter, who at that point was fictitious, you know, it took another 11 years from that day before she arrived. So it was like, I was going, oh, one day my daughter will own this ring. And just felt really inspired, came home. It took a little while afterwards, but I ultimately ended up quitting my job and setting up Cheapy.
Wow. I love that story. It's so personal to you, isn't it?
And it was, yeah, it was like, I guess in some ways it was a quarter life crisis. Mm-hmm. I knew I wasn't going to do fashion when I grew up. I knew I had this burning passion. Mm-hmm. And I kind of think I was really lucky in that mum always told us we could do anything we wanted to do.
Yeah.
And as long as we would work hard enough, you know, mm-hmm. as long as you were prepared. And that doesn't mean, I think if I decided I was taking up a singing career, she would have very gently talked me off the cliff and mm-hmm. been like, darling, I love you, but maybe steer your passion in that direction. Yeah. But for me, it felt like the natural culmination of everything I'd done.
Yeah.
And Ireland doesn't necessarily have a reputation for luxury, for jewellery. There's some incredible brands changing that. Like you look at Simone Rocha, JW Anderson, you know, some really, and there's been some phenomenal brands and businesses. But so it was definitely, and so that was a conversation. Did we move to London? My dad and my sister are based in London, my mum and brother here. But no, we really wanted to start and build Cheapy here yeah. is home. Dublin is home, Ireland is home.
10 plus years later, you're still,
yeah, still
working
here.
And Brian now works with you in the company.
He does indeed.
How do you find that? Like, is that hard to manage that work-life balance?
I think work-life balance is probably a fiction. If anyone, like, I don't know anyone who's actually achieved it. This idea of this perfect ratio where we all get the right amount of work and the right amount of home and friends. And I feel like it's a fluctuation. You know, some days I'm an amazing CEO. And some days I'm an amazing mom. Some days I'm an amazing friend. Some days I'm an amazing daughter. Some days I'm an amazing sister. I rarely get to be all of them in one day. And sometimes I'm an amazing wife. Poor Brian, I left him the last on the list. That's terrible. But like, I can't be all of them. I'm rarely all of them on the same day. And so Brian has been I'm almost teasing that one of my best advice to young founders is to marry your CTO. Terribly useful. I thoroughly recommend it. So Brian's our chief technology officer at Cheapy. He has been instrumental in guiding so much of what we've done over the last 10 years. He would have done a lot of advice. He has actually done a lot of work with some incredible big businesses, the likes of Morgan McKinley, the likes of Newstalk. So he's worked across some really interesting roles. And he did that whilst I was building Cheapy at the very start, but he was always there. You know, it was like, okay, Brian, how are we building this piece of technology? Yeah. It was he who brought in the developers. It was like, okay, what are we doing with our website? Yeah. He did the user experience on it. So it was 2019 when I finally, 4 years ago, when I finally convinced him to come join us. And it has been amazing. It's not that we don't argue, but we argue anyway. We are both really opinionated, really passionate, yeah. both eldest children. Uh-huh. And so we definitely still argue and fight and talk it out. But I think what really makes it work is we have really deep respect for the others.
Yeah.
skill set and what they do and what they bring. And I understand, like, you know, if Brian says this is it, I'm like, okay, this is it, this is how we're doing it. And likewise, if I'm like, no, this is the direction, he's like, yeah, cool, that's the direction. And we also have a brilliant co-director, so there's three of us. So we have three at director level, so it's myself, Brian, and then Kate, our other colleague. And having that balance of the three of us, I would say it means that we have a sort of roving dictatorship. So sometimes Kate and I will be like, okay, cool, this is it, and Brian will be like, guys. Likewise, sometimes it's Brian and I, and Kate is like, come on. And sometimes it's Brian and Kate. And so I've made really sure founder-led companies are amazing. There's so much power and strength in them. But I really feel my superpower, if I had to think about scaling Cheapy and the thing that's driven so much impact, is the ability to work with people who are better than me. Everyone who's joined the business has been better than me. They've added so much value and so much opportunity. And so I don't bring my ego into the room. I love working with people who are brilliant. I was on a call with our social media manager on Friday, and it was brilliant. I literally was just taking notes. I was like, okay, Flora, tell me why do we do this? And she was like, well, this is actually driving this. And I was like, tell me about that. And I love learning and I love growing. And so I'd say I'd take the same attitude to Brian.
Yeah, no, that's great. And what do you do to switch off? What's your...
Actually, I really love... someone taught me this during the summer. So I do a lot of professional development. I think it's really important. Yeah. So that continuous professional... You and I obviously met through Going for Growth, the amazing female entrepreneurship program. And I do a lot of brilliant stuff through there. And one big thing I did on a project I'm on at the moment was learning what hat are you wearing? which is a really interesting one because I wear many hats. I'm a CEO. I'm a creative director in some rooms. I am a mother. I'm a wife. I'm a daughter. I'm a sister. I'm a friend. So I have about 7 or 8 hats I wear in any given moment. And so it's remembering that when I finish work for the day and I'm with my daughter and my husband, I take off the CEO hat. I take off creative director. I'm mom. I'm wife. And they're likewise with friends. So actually my friends are really private. They're not part of my kind of very public life. Mm-hmm. So it's remembering the hat I'm wearing in the room. What room am I in and what hat am I wearing? And it sounds really obvious, but actually sometimes it can be easy to still wear your work hat.
Yeah.
Even when you're off for the weekend and you're down doing, you know, you're away with your friends.
Yeah.
So a lot of what we do is, it sounds really funny, we eat. We do a lot of eatings. We do a lot of cooking. We flip friends around for dinner all the time. We do a lot, like everyone around for lunch. We go to like other, you know, go to friends' houses. We do a lot of eating and hanging out.
Yeah.
We're probably post-partying right now because of all the tiny kids.
Yeah,
we're
course,
not really
yeah.
in a, like an out age, but like over dinner, party, friends, like that's our bank holiday plans are all about hanging out with our gang.
And you have your boundaries for work and for life, and that's
I try to. Yeah. I'm not always perfect, but I do as much as possible be like, okay, you know, what am I doing in this room? You know, we went away, I was saying to you earlier that we were celebrating two of my friends, it was their 20-year anniversary of moving to Ireland, which is such a huge thing to celebrate. Like, you know, Irish people have done it for literally generations of choosing to go somewhere else, of choosing a different country and a different home. And when we were all out together in January, and we were like, my God, like it's literally 20 years for both of them this year. So we rented this ridiculous castle in Kilkenny. Airbnb is basically my hobby. This ridiculous crumbling old castle down in Kilkenny. 8 of us went away with the kids and just hung out and cooked and ate and talked nonsense, made loads of cocktails. Mm. Like, it was magical.
You have a knack for finding really cool Airbnbs.
It's one of those things. I feel like we speed through our lives. You know, we are running for a finish line.
Yeah.
But what's the finish line? What's the moment?
Yeah.
Brian and I got really interested in this idea of seasons. That we have seasons in our life. And some of them are fast and some of them are slow. And the only way you make breaks is... So I actually sit down in January every year, Louise, and I plan out our year for travel. So every year I'll go, okay, cool, I'm here for work, here for work, here for work. Brian's here for work. This is when we're going away with my family. This is when we're going away. So actually in 2 weeks, we're going away with my husband's family. We're going to Portugal. So there'll be his parents, all of us, the kids, and then all of the grandchildren together for a week. And we're going to, then it was going away with our gang to Kilkenny. We're going away with another. We've got this gorgeous pink castle this time down in July in Waterford with a gang of friends. And honestly, this is our kind of our college and school gang who we probably meet up, like honestly, if we do twice a year, it's a miracle because we're all across different countries now.
Yeah.
But it's a week. We'll go to this ridiculous big mad pink castle down on it, like it's the most beautiful thing you've ever seen down in Waterford, and we'll just hang out. The kids will run riot all day, like they will, we will all the kids in bed by 7 o'clock, and then we'll have cocktails and talk. And so yeah, I've made a point of, I think because of that life race, of making sure that I put anchors in my calendar.
Yeah,
because otherwise you get to the end of the year and you realize you haven't made space and you haven't made time,
and you have to plan ahead, I think, sometimes for these things when life gets really busy, and especially when there's kids involved.
Well, like you have a very busy life right now, and your babe hasn't even arrived. Like it is a crazy tornado. And I guess I want to look back, and that self-reflection piece, I want to look back on the year and say I made time for the people I love.
Yeah.
I made time for my mom. I made time for, like, I had to be with her amazing grandparents.
I can tell you have a lot of respect for your mom, and I read in an interview you've done previously she lives with you.
She does. We're really different and really similar all at once. So it was during COVID, and Brian and I bought our first house, thought it was our forever home, had like renovated it from literally, like took the plaster off the walls level of renovation. It was insane. Painted it with so much love and care. And then during COVID, my mum lived 1.97 kilometres from us.
Oh, wow.
And numbers. I'm obsessed with numbers and how they impact us. And I remember thinking, if she'd been 2.1 kilometres, what would we have done?
I know.
You know, we were so lucky to have her within our distance. And, you know, it didn't mean that, like, it was, you know, she's older and I was pregnant. It wasn't like we weren't hanging out together, but it just meant we could, you know, go over and sit on her doorstep and she could come sit on ours.
Yeah.
And so it was that Christmas 2020, and Brian was like, Mum had sold our family home in Wicklow and was buying in Dublin near Brian and I so that she could be close for the baby coming, and she wanted to be, you know, wanted involved, to be really near us.
Of course, yeah.
And Brian was like, this is crazy. Why is your mum buying a second house? Like, why do we want two houses? He had adored his granny. So had this amazing relationship with his granny. And he just thought, oh, like, I want our girl to have that. We knew we were a really long road. We knew Aya is so special and we know it's only going to be her. So we kind of had a funny clarity in that we knew what the next 10 years was going to look like. As much as you can ever look like, we knew kind of what the next 10 years was going to look like. And so 18 months after we bought our first house, we sold it, which was crazy. It was a roller coaster. Sold our house in another lockdown and then ultimately bought a house with mum. So mum lives in the garden apartment, so we have separate front doors, separate kitchens, separate sitting rooms and a shared staircase. So it means Aya can run down the stairs and knock on granny's door, and her Maymay is what she calls my mum, and it's such a privilege. We're so,
so
lucky.
Sweet. It's so, they're so nice to be able to build those memories.
Huge. It's called intergenerational living. And it's apparently a huge trend, because it's funny, some people are horrified, you know, they were like, I could not live with my mum if you paid me. And for some people it's amazing, and I think for us it works really well. You know, it means Aya has mum there as that support. It means funny things, like for anyone who has kids, so for some of our friends, you know, getting a babysitter, they might get out twice a year. You know, just getting a babysitter is so impossible, whereas for Brian and I it means on a Wednesday evening we can pop Aya's monitor into mum and go out and have a glass of wine together or see our friends. And so that's amazing.
Yeah, that's kind of something we're in the, well, not in the process of it, but we're considering at the moment, is like, how are we going to, I don't know, get that support? So we're looking to move. We're in a two bed at the moment. And there's just not really enough. Like, we have space, but to have someone stay comfortably quite often, that you just want a bit more space, you know?
And you need that, because that you're going to need that support of someone coming, like your mom coming to stay for 4 or 5 days.
And it's the first grandchild on both sides. So
oh my God.
Both grandparents will want to be
so they're going to want to also be there, all the grannies and granddads.
So many changes ahead of us. I'm like, what is my life going to look like in a year's time? It's going to be so different.
And it's so huge. But I think just anticipating that and thinking about, like, actually, you know, they say it takes a village to raise a child. And the big challenge for us is that we don't have our villages, really, because we are, tend to be, you know, we sometimes are living too far away from our families. We're all working such long hours. We don't really have that kind of like automatic village of all of the babies being reared together. And also as women, you know, so many of us want to work. And so we aren't necessarily, you know, there isn't this kind of huge community of mums who are staying at home. And so it means you've got to be really, like, considered on how you curate that village and that gang around you, you know, and how do you, it was so funny when I got pregnant, Brian's folks were like, you know, will you move closer to us? And we live in town, we live in Dublin. And so we decided to stay, but it meant, you know, it would have been amazing. They're incredible. They do, you know, they would have been very happy taking Aya and done full-time childcare. But after selling the house, moved out to the countryside for 6 months, had a wonderful time, but knew it wasn't for us, because happiness, and we all define happiness differently, but one of my love languages, one of my forms of happiness, is proximity to the people I love. So one of my best friends lives literally 12 minutes walk away. Like, we are, you know, it's like, it's Tuesday evening bottle of wine territory. We in the garden, we can do it. My brother lives half an hour down the road with his amazing fiance. My mum lives downstairs. Our friends have literally just moved in, like, 40 minutes walk away. So our whole gang live within. We have this running joke that basically we all bought on the same bus route. Like, and but it was quite intentional. I remember when our, you know, as each of them have bought, it's been like, okay, where are we going and what are we doing? Because that community is so important. It is for me.
And for me as well. Like, just remember feeling that during COVID, probably mostly. And everyone felt it during that. Like, it mattered how close you were to people. I was living in New York and I came back to be around people. And now where we're looking, one of my best friends is pregnant, which I told you, because I know you have a best friend who has a baby around the same age.
Literally 10 weeks between Aya and one of her best friends. It is the greatest gift in the whole. It's such a privilege. Like, I knew we were lucky, but, like, my God.
To have someone going through everything you're going through at the same time. And so we're kind of looking near them. So we'll see.
Honestly, my best advice, literally. So at one stage, we nearly bought a house 800 metres from our besties. And I was like, amazing. This, I would have bought opposite them. Honestly, if a house had come up, I would have bought opposite
them.
And I, because I just think that community and connection, and, like, the 12 minutes walk, and I genuinely was devastated when it was going to be 12 minutes. I was like, damn it, is this too far? And I was like, okay, I've got to put this back in context. It's actually amazing, because it's amazing when you're pregnant. It's amazing when you're in early stages, and it's amazing for your kids, because they all get to. So when I was away at the weekend, Brian and all the dads took all of the kids. So there's three of them really close in age, and they took them all to the dead zoo, and they had this, like, lovely dad date, went to the dead zoo, like, showed the kids are so young. They were just thought it was deadly. Like, was all that, you know, all stuffed animals and like bunnies.
Where
and,
is
like,
that?
Yeah, it's the Natural History Museum.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's like, took them to Dead Zoo and then took them to Marion Square for some playground and then went and had pints in the pub.
You know, love
and
it.
We, at home, 6 o'clock. It wasn't like, it wasn't out in the way we could have considered community and connection before. But it was enough that they, you know, they all filled their social cups. They saw their people and our little people saw each other. So I was getting sent these little pictures of Aya and her little best friend Elle walking around the Natural History Museum holding hands.
Oh, that's so cute. You know, yeah.
So special.
We had Angela Scanlon on the podcast recently.
I adore Angela.
Yeah, and we were chatting all things motherhood, all things jewellery. She actually has her own jewellery brand as well.
My Freckle, it's beautiful. Yes. I love her stuff. All the pearls are amazing.
And we got chatting. She started off in Expose doing fashion segments. Yeah. And so did I, actually.
I did a few bits.
Yeah, but I was kind of, I had a blog at that point. Yeah, so it was kind of something I was trying out. But my first segment was with a jewellery brand. And I did not realise like the complexity of each piece, like the metals, the how they react to different skins. Like I was doing the fashion side of things, And oh my God, wow, like was that a big learning for you at the start?
So jewellery is actually a really interesting thing because it's engineering and design.
Yeah.
So whilst it's a design piece, ultimately it's also engineering. So you've got to make sure, so, you know, I think about something like our North Star signet. So that like North Star is such a huge piece for us. It's about the idea for GP that... So sailors navigate at night by following the North Star. So whether, and it's literally been the same method for thousands of years, and whether you're going home or going on an adventure, you follow your North Star. And I've always just loved that idea that some of us are looking for adventure, some of us are looking for home, some of us are looking for connection, some of us are looking for solo. And I love the idea that you can follow your North Star. And so North Stars have been such an important theme for us. But actually, when you think about it, when I made those first pieces, so North Star, the necklace and North Star, all the North Star pieces are hand modelled. So I would have made those very first pieces literally by hand. It's a form of torture. Because you basically are trying to take something in your brain and get it out into clay, like into a model of something real. So taking out and modelling the pieces. So like, you know, get the ring, model it. But then what happens next is we take the setting. So the actual technical setting that holds the diamonds in place. And that's 3D rendered in CAD, in computer-aided design. We 3D render. So actually we're working on our next collection at the moment. And it's just really mad. So like this is North Star is a current piece. And then I'm thinking about, you know, our next collection launching. So a gorgeous launch in July and then another beautiful one in September. And what the guys are doing at the moment is the same process where part of it is computer-aided design. And then what happens for that, so that computer-aided design piece is CAD, is then printed in wax using 3D printing. So like we're literally talking cutting edge technology. So CAD, 3D wax into printing and then cast, and then the two pieces are assembled together. And the casting process is called lost wax casting, which has literally been around since the ancient Egyptians. So you're taking something that was developed in the last 10 years and marrying it with something that's thousands of years old. And the two things together are make that, you know, that's that engineering piece around jewellery, which it is design, craft, inspiration, the story of North Star, the craft of making of lost wax casting, and then the technology of 3D printing. So it's every piece is sort of a little marvel of the marriage of technology and storytelling.
And the technology is always changing as well.
Fascinating.
With your relaunch, you've introduced lots of new high-end pieces.
Yeah.
What was the thinking behind that?
It's been such fun. So we're priced somewhere at GP, somewhere between about 300 quid and 30,000. So like that range is wild. But when you think about it, that sums up the moments in your life, you know, and it's not that everyone wants a 30,000 quid ring, but actually there's big moments in your life. You know, there's the day you get engaged, the day you get married, those huge, big public milestones that are once in a lifetime. And there's also much smaller, quieter milestones. There's the I survived, you know, just that was a week, that was a month, that was a year. I want a really beautiful pair of studs just to honour that moment. I want a promise ring to tell the person I love most in the world, and then I'll come back and get the bigger diamond. And so we go across that huge, big spectrum of different pieces so that we can serve our community at all of the moments in their lives. When we look at the moments we mark, it's, you know, your first diamond, it's your 16th, your 18th, your 21st. It's graduation, it's first job, it's promotion. Then it starts becoming engagement, wedding, 30ths, 40ths. And then you start, and also then between that, you're moving into having your own babies.
Yeah.
And then the journey starts all over again where you're gifting the gorgeous women in your life. And so we think about all of that across. And for next chapter. So for our launch of our rebrand, for the new packaging, for the new logo, I wanted the pieces to be sort of a celebration of everything we do, everything that we do, the best of what we do.
Mm.
And so the ring is one in a trillion. So it's a lab-grown diamond. So these are certified carbon neutral lab-grown diamonds. And they take a seed of a natural diamond, of a mined diamond, and then subjected to the same heat and light and intensity, and you can grow a diamond.
Yeah.
So it's basically you get rid of the ethical concerns, no need to worry about conflict mm-hmm. diamonds, no need to worry about any of that. And you get outrageously beautiful. Actually, I'm wearing this is from Next Decade Collection looking. And I'm so excited I got to wear the sample because we were...
Describe that shape as, just for people who aren't watching the video?
So, of course, it's basically an explosion of diamonds. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's that lovely idea. It's Queen of Stars. So that's a lovely idea of that starburst of diamonds. Yes. Actually, set the center.
Such an unusual shape. I love it.
It's cool, right?
Mm.
And it's that same idea. I've always been obsessed with unusual shapes.
Me too.
With that idea. Yes, that idea of not just a classic... I love a classic round, but our most loved ring, Yumiya Magic, has a classic round in the center, but then it has two little rounds set on the side in this little three-prong setting. So it's got this kind of gorgeous diamond fall off that almost makes it look like it's called a marquise in diamond language, a marquise, but it looks like an eye. So it has this amazing kind of eye effect. And I've loved that. So likewise with the ring I'm wearing, that's from Next Chapter. With our ring, one in a trillion, it has an oval center and trillion, which is basically triangle sides. So there's these beautiful triangle sides. We then had one in a trillion, the necklace, which was like a little triangle diamond. I just thought, how cool would that be?
Oh, the new collection is just beautiful, especially one in a trillion. You need to go, everyone listening, you need to go on Instagram and look at it.
It's
amazing. And I also love your Instagram for all the stories that you tell.
Well, I think that's one of the huge privileges. Like, you know, we are, because we're involved in these huge moments, like this huge intensity of love and loss and hope and all of the bits, we get told, we know you're getting engaged before you do. We have your ring. We know the story. We know why he or her fell in love with you, why they want to marry you. You go through such a journey. If you read our Google reviews, you know, just the reviews of the team in store and online. And so we're in 70 countries around the world, but have only one store. So about half of what we do happens online and half in our store. And you read the reviews of our customer experience team, of our store team, and they're just insane. The reviews are off the charts. I'm always telling the team they're so amazing because they're there at such emotional intensity.
Yes.
And that's why I think it's so important we share those stories.
Yeah.
Because there's such a gorgeous story actually coming out this week. Oh my God. Because we went and asked. Sometimes we get busy and you're like, oh God, we actually need to ask everyone, what are their amazing stories? And this incredible woman and just this roller coaster that she went on. And then it ends in her getting her engagement and how special it is. And you just think how lucky are we to be in to get to be part of those moments, to mark them.
It's incredible to be in a busy work day and to be like, this is what we do.
Huge. And
this
I would
is
say
the story to brighten up anyone's week, you know.
Literally, and I would say we share maybe 1% of what we hear.
Mm.
Because so many of the there's that wonderful phrase which essentially you have no idea of what journey people are on.
Yeah.
You know, everyone is on this big journey and you look and you're like, oh yeah, well they're really successful and really perfect and everything's great. And actually you then hear people's stories of what they're going on, what's happening to them, of all of the, of this incredible roller coaster of life.
Was there any standout stories recently that you can think of?
I have a few that are really special to me. So one, just a few weeks ago actually, I popped into store and I so rarely get to go in, but I just happened to pop in and I saw Katie, our store manager, was really deep in conversation with someone. I was sharing it the other day and I was like, so I didn't want to interrupt her, I was letting her be, and she was like, oh, come over. And it was these two amazing ladies who I'd say were in their 70s. And we do this upgrade program. So if you've bought something from us in gold plated sterling, we used to make and have a collection that was gold plated and sterling silver. So if you bought something from us in gold plated, you can come back in and upgrade it into solid gold. So it means you keep the memory, the moment, how special it was, but we make it then in solid gold. So you basically have it forever. And these two ladies both had initial necklaces. So we do these letter necklaces with people would get them for when they have a babe, for when, you know, it's a gorgeous present for engagement, wedding, 30th. And these two ladies had them. So it was all the letters of their grandchildren.
Mm.
And each, had a letter for each. And then each of them both had a little disc with a star on it. And they started telling me the story and they were like, oh, you know, this is, you know, Leah. She was born, she's 3-4 years old now. And they were going through each of their grandchildren. And then when they got to the disc with the star on it, they said, you know, that was the grandchild I lost. So it was one for miscarriage.
Mm.
And it was so amazing because as grannies and as mums, they were marking this incredibly heartbreaking moment that happens to so many women, this, you know, this piece of loss, and they were honoring it. You know, it wasn't just a forgotten moment that was like, oh, we're just going to park that and it's, you know, it happens and get over it. For them, it was a longed for, wanted grandchild. And even though in one of the cases it was very, very early, it was still loved and wanted. And I just thought, like, that is an incredible thing to get to do. You know, and that's the story of...
The powerful story.
Well, because we are, you know, so often we think about diamonds as like, you know, the day you get engaged, the day you get married, the big moments for love. And actually as women, our lives are so much more complex.
Yeah.
You know, I have my crown of hope. I wear it for, we found out 7 years ago that we might not be able to have kids. And I remember it was such a shock because you literally, as a woman, you spend your whole life trying not to get pregnant.
Yeah.
Like you know, your teens and your 20s are all about not getting pregnant. And then when we finally decided it was time for us and we realized, you know, we might not. And I reframed wanting to have a baby into being, we will start a family. You know, being mindful. I always find manifesting a little bit toxic because it's kind of, it's a lot of privilege in manifesting. You know, so many books are like, oh yeah, Alex, I wanted to buy a house. And so like, I rang my friend and my friend was selling her house. So I was like, great, I bought a house. And I'm like, actually, the journey is so much more complex for many people. And so I couldn't have manifested a baby. It wasn't physically possible. I couldn't be like, I'm going to manifest a baby and I'll have a baby. But what I could do is reframe this huge loss into being, we'll start a family.
Yeah.
And not have a baby, but for me, starting a family meant maybe we'd adopt, maybe we'd foster, whatever route it took us on, we'd start a family.
Yeah.
And so I made a ring called Crown of Hope that has five diamonds in it. And so there's five diamonds for the 5 years I knew it would take us on the journey. And for me, it helped reframing it, not within a year or two, but five. And so I wore it for her. And it ultimately actually became part of our collection, part of my collection, because it just felt so right. People asked me for it. And then and people wear it for very different reasons. No one else's. It was my very personal journey of this 5 years. And the diamond points forward for hope. And so it was Crown of Hope. And I arrived 4 years into that journey, a tiny rocket of love that arrived into our world. And we were so lucky to have her. And I made a crown of hope for her the year she was born. So I wear two. And so when she's older, I'll give her hers and I'll have mine. And so that was my story on. And I always think about that of love, hope and everything in between.
Do you think the goal for Chupi is still the same as when you started out?
Yes. I think I probably got a little lost on the way at the start. I think I started with a really clear idea of I wanted to make pieces of the future to mark the biggest moments of people's life. But between year one and year four or five, I was probably still figuring it out. And there's no map to starting a business. You know, there's no roadmap. There's no route. It's why, you know, Going for Growth as a program is so phenomenal. So I did that very early. I did it in 15. So I was 2 years in, and that probably really helped. It's an amazing program supporting female entrepreneurs who want to build businesses of scale and impact. And it's free, which is just such an amazing thing. So co-founded by Enterprise Ireland at KPMG. And that gave me some of the map. But those early years, definitely, that helped build them up. I did it again in 18, which was really transformational. But yeah, definitely pieces of the future, moments in your life. I think the bit that came afterwards was love, hope and everything in between.
Yeah. So you give so much of your time to those programs that you spoke about, and you've been involved in them, and you were my lead entrepreneur when I did it last year. And we all, like, my group still all get together and everything.
Oh, like, I'm so proud. I literally, every time you guys post, and I'm still in the WhatsApp group that you're all in, I'm literally like a proud mom. I'm like, look at them all. They're still meeting up. They're still
so helpful.
Supporting each other and championing each other. You know, you think, like, as everyone has been so amazing, Fiona from Riley, as she won the award, like, you guys were all there championing.
And I met her for lunch on Thursday. She's pregnant, so she was giving me some advice.
Such a huge, like, that celebration. And you guys will be each other's board.
Yeah.
Exactly. You'll grow together and support each other. And that is, it's why Ireland's been an amazing place to start a business. It's because women supporting women, we can do incredible things.
Absolutely. So I have one more question for you before we finish off. What does the future hold for Chupi?
It's such an exciting place, having built Chupi to 10 now. And we've got this phenomenal team, and we did a big fundraise last year.
3.75 million.
3.75 million. Yeah, no, it was wonderful. We've got phenomenal investors backing us, BVP and Abbey Finance, along with PTSB, like brilliant, brilliant team who really believe in the vision and get what we're doing. So we've just launched Next Chapter. Next Decade is the next stage. We're going to open a beautiful flagship store. I cannot wait to show it to you. We're going to be about about 3,000 square feet. It's absolutely divine. I cannot wait. So we're going to open that. We're going to launch the beautiful collection. It's going to be divine. Look towards opening in our flagship store in London. And then we're rolling out some store-in-store experiences across UK and Ireland. Really for me, and I think in three-year cycles, the next 3 years are about UK and Ireland, about London and Dublin, about expanding across out and into the country. And that's what I want to do. And then, on a personal level, I'm just so happy. Brian and I bought a house last year and settling in with my mom and I, watching her grow and change. So a really, really exciting next couple of years.
Yeah, sounds so exciting. Thank you so much for giving up your time today. It was such a pleasure to have you on. I could have stayed here chatting all day.
Oh, my pleasure, Louise. It's so lovely to be here. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for listening today. I really hope you enjoyed that episode. Tupi is just so inspirational. Ever since I've met her and she was my mentor in Going for Growth, I find out every time I talk to her, I get something from it. She has so much experience to draw on and she has so many tools to kind of help with managing business and life and trying to get that balance right, even though it's so difficult at times. But I really hope you enjoyed it. You can listen back to previous episodes of Open Book. They're available on the Go Loud player and everywhere you listen to your podcast. And we'll be back on Monday with our bonus episode.